Hello, my name is Dr. Gary Collins. I'm a clinical psychologist and professor of counseling at Trinity Evangelical Divinity School in Deerfield, Illinois. This is a tape about parenting teenagers. It has been prepared by Dr. Keith Olson, who is a professional counselor at the Family Consultation Service of San Diego, California, and author of several books, including one titled Counseling Adolescents. This tape is not meant to replace a counselor, to answer all of your questions, or to solve your problems for you. It is intended as a supplement to counseling, an added plus that your counselor would like you to hear and discuss during some later counseling sessions. It has been discovered in the past that listening to tapes can be helpful, so listen now as Dr. Keith Olson talks to you about parenting teenagers.
It's my pleasure to talk with you about one of my favorite topics, parenting teenagers. It's important for us to recognize a little bit about what adolescence is, how we as parents can best minister as in our parenting role to our young people whom God has given to us. One of the things that I would like to state at the beginning is that I think adolescence is a very well-defined period. There are some who would say that adolescence is purely a Western phenomenon, but I think that there are some very specific tasks that young people in their adolescent years are accomplishing. There are some very necessary things that they must be able to do in order to move healthily and fully into adulthood. And we as parents have a great amount of input into how well they accomplish those tasks. So that's what this tape is about, how we as moms and dads can best minister in our role as parents to the young people as they go through their teenage years or adolescence. Generally speaking, adolescence runs from about 12 years old until about 20 years old. It's that period of time when kids are transitioning from childhood into adulthood. The Bible speaks of adolescence. It talks about the adolescence of Jesus Christ. In Luke chapter 2, starting with verse 48, we read the following. His mother, Jesus' mother, said to him, "Son, why have you treated us like this? Your father and I have been anxiously searching for you." And then continues in verse 51, "Then he went down to Nazareth with them and was obedient to them. And Jesus grew in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and men." Of course, this scriptural reference refers to the time when Jesus was about 12 years old. And his parents went with him to Jerusalem, and he stayed behind as his parents were returning home. And instead of following with them, he stayed in Jerusalem, stayed in the temple, and talked with the religious leaders there. And this conversation occurs after they went back and found him. Which one of us is parents, as moms or dads, have not said, "Son, why have you treated us like this? You know, why do you act the way you do when we love you so much?" Those are common words, common sentiments that we express. But then the scripture goes on and it says that Jesus was obedient to them. And then in verse 52, "And Jesus grew in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and man." That's talking about a variety of areas of development that is so vital for young people to be growing and developing in these areas of their life. In wisdom, speaking of mental development, stature, of course, speaking of physical development, growing in favor with God, and that, of course, is a reference to spiritual development. And also it says that Jesus grew in favor with men. And that refers, of course, to social development. Four very important areas of development: mental, physical, spiritual, and social. All vital areas that adolescent young people develop in, grow in, mature in, so that they can move into adulthood with effectiveness and to be able to handle life in a way that is both healthy for them and productive and constructive for those around them. Now, as we parent our teenagers, those of you especially who have young people, say, who are 12, but also maybe have children who may be in the 19-20-year range, certainly understand that we're talking about a wide variety of behaviors, a wide range of development. We cannot parent, say, a 12-year-old in the same way that we're going to parent a 19-year-old or a 20-year-old. They think differently. They see the world differently. And physically, of course, they're quite different, too. Well, what we typically do then is break down adolescence into three different age ranges, and those are called early, mid, and late adolescence. Early adolescence runs usually from about age 11 or 12 until, oh, say, 13 or 14. Usually it covers about a year and a half age span. It starts with puberty. The growth spurt that so typically happens just before puberty. I remember talking to a youth pastor who recalled that he grew at about 9 inches in 1 year during this age range. One of the things that parents have to deal with is, of course, constantly buying clothes and lengthening pants and buying new shoes well before they're worn out. There's some other things happening with the physical maturity at this early adolescent stage. One of them is the sexual changes that actually bring on early adolescence. For girls, they experience their first menstrual cycle. For boys, ejaculation usually marks the beginning of puberty and hence the early stages of this early adolescent period. Along with the sexual changes are the secondary sex characteristics. For young girls, there's breast development. Their bodies become rounder. They often gain weight at this period of time. For boys, they become stronger. They grow much taller. Their musculature begins developing. The development of hair. Just a lot of changes that alter the way they view themselves and that alter also the way other people respond to them. It's very important for us as parents to understand that as our young people are going through these changes, they have a lot of questions about themselves. They have a lot of questions about their own okayness. And we can help them tremendously by being open and discussing with them. So many of us, I'm afraid, had experiences where, you know, our parents did not talk to us about what was happening in our bodies when we were going through adolescence. And this is a beautiful opportunity for us to draw close to our teenagers, to discuss with them, to be open to their questions, to encourage their questions. We can't just passively sit back and hope that they will ask us, but we need to actively encourage and spend time with them and talk with them maybe about our own early adolescence and some of the questions and thoughts that we had as we were going through that same stage. Now, mentally, some changes are happening also during this early adolescent phase. Some of these mental changes end up being very unpleasant and very frustrating for us as parents. One of the characteristics of this early and in the mid-adolescent stage with mental functioning is that of critical thinking. Now, this is very important that our teenagers begin to think critically, that they begin to question and not just accept what we have told them in the past is true, but to really determine, do I believe this or do I not believe this? They must develop this characteristic in order to grow into adults who can think for themselves and who can properly evaluate teaching that they receive to determine, is this something that they want to live by? We need mature Christians in our churches who can rightly divide truth from fiction, true spiritual teaching from falsehood. And this development begins very sharply in adolescence. Now, the unhappy part of that is that often young people carry it overboard. It's like any new skill or any new trait, often it's done clumsily or it's done inappropriately. And moms and dads are typically some of the greatest targets for this critical thinking. Young people in their early and mid-adolescent years often find very little that they like and approve of in other family members. And so that gets difficult to live with. But we need to understand what really is happening. They are learning how to use a new mental skill, critical thinking. And so we need to encourage proper use of it. We need to be careful not to induce guilt within them, a false sense of guilt about their critical thinking. But we need to encourage them to learn how to use it properly. And we need to reinforce the fact that they are thinking in a critical way or in an evaluative manner. We need to reinforce that skill and help them to feel good about their ability to evaluate issues around them. Negativity is another common expression of this same mental change. A lot of times we have a hard time getting our young people, our young adolescents, to be positive about much of anything that we would suggest. We need to accept this as pretty age-appropriate behavior. We may have had a child through elementary school who has been very positive and an absolute delight, and all of a sudden they become more negative. Sarcasm is another common interpersonal style of relating with early adolescents. Again, since it's so common, it's a normal kind of behavior pattern. Our task is not to obliterate it in their repertoire of social responses, but to try to help them to reduce it, to try to help them to become more conscious of how perhaps their sarcasm is causing other people to feel. Incidentally, we need to remind ourselves that our teenagers usually, in their own thoughts, are every bit as negative and critical of themselves as they are of us, and the same of their friends and of their peers. But often they don't outwardly verbalize that negativity about themselves. And so we don't understand that they really sometimes are venting negative feelings that they have about themselves onto us as parents. In spiritual development, we find that the early adolescent typically is very much wanting closeness and intimacy with God. They tend to be very sensitive spiritually. They want closeness. They want a sense of family. Youth group is very important here because they like this group feeling or family feeling with their peers who are also Christians. At the same time, we need to recognize that the critical attitude, the critical thinking, often will be expressed in a negative attitude or a criticalness about church and about our own spiritual leadership in the family as well. Socially, some remarkable changes are also happening. It's during this early adolescent phase that what we call adolescent rebellion is really getting underway. Adolescent rebellion does not have to be violent. I think it's a normal and a healthy part of adolescence. In fact, in some ways it must happen because it represents the young person pushing away from mom and dad far enough so that they can see themselves as a separate entity. This is very important because the developmental task of adolescence is developing a sense of identity. What makes me different from everybody else? What makes me special? What makes me a person who is unique? And that's the development of identity. Young children, elementary school children, preschool children, gain a sense of okayness about themselves by pleasing mom and dad. That turns around in teenage years. The teenager needs to push away and gain a sense of okayness by seeing themselves as somebody separate and distinct from other people. And this is a vital task in order for them to grow into adulthood as strong individuals. Well, they push away from parents and join themselves then to their peer group. I call this the clumping phenomenon. And we find young people in this early adolescent stage kind of clumping or clinging together with their peers, feeling good when they're together with their peers and feeling very depressed and sad and lonely when they're not with their peers. The emotional life of the young adolescent is also very interesting. Typically, there are a lot of mood swings. They tend to be very introspective, moody, defensive. We've already talked about the criticalness, which is more of a mental function, but of course has its emotional characteristics as well. Part of this is physiological. with the onset of puberty, hormones are coursing through the bloodstream and creating a lot of changes, not just physically, but mentally and emotionally as well. And so the whole emotional climate of the early adolescent is affected by what is happening with them physically, especially with the hormones. They also are dealing with a lot of very sensitive issues interpersonally and personally, and so that will impact their emotionality as well. Mid-adolescence runs from roughly age 14 to 16 and usually lasts about 2 years. Typically in mid-adolescence, the young person is accommodating or adapting to the changes that began in their early adolescence. Mentally, young people in this age range kind of have to be correct or have to be right. We find often that they are very insistent upon the fact that they're correct and we're wrong. And of course, sometimes as parents, we get into power struggles, and we need to try to avoid that as much as possible. When it's not a vital issue, we need to give it up. We need to not force the teenager to admit that they're wrong or to find the truth in absolutely everything. Because what is happening here is they are trying to establish value in their own identity, and that is represented in this clinging to the insistence that they are the ones that are right. You know, if I'm wrong, then I'm not valuable. If I'm incorrect, then I'm worthless. And so we need to not rub their faces in it, so to speak. We need to encourage them in their thinking, whether they're right or wrong. Now, this is, of course, on issues that are not absolutely essential. We need to pick our battlegrounds very carefully. It's during the mid-adolescent age range, though, that young people are beginning to use a higher form of logic. They're able much more to think in terms of if-then. They're able to think in terms of options. They are able to think at a much more intricate logical and rational level, and so we need to encourage that. But like all new skills, again, they're going to be a bit clumsy. They sometimes are not going to be appropriate, and so we need to not be overly critical and overly demanding, but encouraging of them as they learn how to think more logically and to begin to think through the consequences of their behavior. Physically, as I said earlier, there's a consolidation of the earlier changes. The mid-adolescent is becoming more accustomed to being more physically sexual, either as a male or a female. They're learning to deal with their stronger sexual impulses. They're becoming more accustomed to being treated by others as a man or a woman, or a young man or a young woman, rather than as a kid. And so they're beginning to adapt to their emerging sexuality. And we need to encourage that within them. And as parents, sometimes we need to understand our own feelings of threat, either our feelings of sexual attraction to our child, or sometimes our own personal competition. Some dads feel very competitive with their adolescent sons as they see their sons becoming very virile and active and energetic and attractive to young girls. And so we need to be conscious of our own feelings of inadequacy, of our own feelings of threat, so that we don't then impose our reactions on our teenagers in guilt-inducing ways or in severe ways or overly harsh ways. The spiritual development of the mid-adolescent is highly impacted by the mental development. We find a strong idealism in this age. They have strong spiritual ideals as well as political and social ideals and relational ideals. And yet their idealism is confronted with their own critical thinking. And so typically, spiritually as in other areas of their life, they have a lot of inner conflict. They haven't got it all worked out yet. And again, we need to be helping them to talk it out and to talk it through, and we need to be listening to them even more than talking to them all the time and teaching them at all times. One of the cries of adolescence is nobody listens, and of course the corollary to that is nobody cares. One of the most effective ways that we express our caring is by listening to them and not just teaching and talking at or talking to them. Because the social environment is so important to the mid-adolescent as well as the early adolescent, the group takes on a great deal of importance. And we find in mid-adolescence that many teenagers prefer to be a member of a youth group in another church other than their own church. And as parents, we need to recognize that that is a part of the adolescent rebellion. It's a part of the moving to somewhat separate identity. Now, of course, it makes a big difference if they choose a church of a denomination that is similar to yours, rather than a denomination that is greatly different, or a church that isn't even a Christian-oriented church. But if it's not an extreme difference, then I would encourage you to understand that the need to be in a different youth group of a different church is, again, an expression of their emerging identity. And go with it. Get them to talk with you about it, and you talk with them about it, but be essentially responsive and supportive of that emerging identity and the behavior that is expressing that. Now, their social development in mid-adolescence takes on a few changes. In early adolescence, the peer group is of vital importance. That begins to break down in mid-adolescence. Young people begin to get a little more selective about who do they want to get close to, who do they especially want to be around, and of course, this is when they start developing strong buddy relationships that often develop into lifelong friendships. It's during this age range that they also begin dating and selecting certain individuals of the opposite sex that they want to be known by, and also that they want to get to know a little bit more intimately. It's another step in the movement toward establishing their own sense of identity. Emotionally, mid-adolescents usually become a little bit less moody. They often are still very defensive because their identities are not very well formed. And since their identities are not well formulated, the defensiveness is set up to protect them from impacts from the outside, including and especially from mom and dad. Now, late adolescence begins at about age 17, typically, and goes until usually, say, around 19 or 20 or even 21. Some of us are still very adolescent in our behavior and attitudes at 27, 34, and 42, but typically adolescence ends in the very early 20s or very late teens. When it's working well, when adolescence is working well, the late adolescent years are delightful, are wonderful. When it's not, it can be disastrous. Mentally, these young people are adopting a more future perspective. They're thinking in terms of life from other people's views, not just their own, because as their identities are emerging, then they're able to transcend themselves, transcend their own interests, transcend their own perspectives, and see arguments that they're involved in, relationships, conflicts, decisions, political issues from other people's perspectives and not just themselves. They usually become a little bit more responsible during their late adolescence than they've been before. It's like all the work, all the investment that you've been doing as a mom and a dad, it begins to pay off, and you see them emerging into adults of whom you can be proud and with whom you anticipate being able to have a very long and delightful growing relationship with as another adult. Physically, of course, they're attaining an adult stature, an adult physical characteristics. Spiritually, their relationship with God, their spiritual relationship with the world takes on greater commitment, takes on greater stability, and reflects, again, the mental changes, the ability to think more in terms of giving to others than just receiving. Their social development is very important during the late adolescent years. Earlier in their life, they've been involved primarily in increasing their ability to have intimate relationships, to be able to share themselves with others and receive other people. Now, in late adolescence, they're able to work more on a sense of commitment. It's during this age, of course, that they think in terms of committing themselves to a member of the opposite sex in marriage. or very long-term dating relationships, which is very important in preparing them for the early adulthood task of developing a deep sense of intimacy and commitment. With the social development, there also is a lowering of their defenses and a greater ability to think of others because their identities are becoming more established and more firmly rooted. Emotionally, there is a much greater sense of stability. We find enduring patterns. We find a personality orientation. We find interpersonal orientations becoming more stabilized. We find this late adolescent emerging more as a whole person. Now, when late adolescence is not working well, we have a young person who is almost an adult in physical stature, but who typically is experiencing a great deal of self-doubt, a great deal of fear about the future, a great deal of anger, because they see themselves way behind their peers, and often this anger becomes vented toward authority figures, toward parents, toward school, toward police and other social institutions, and often also the anger is directed inward through depression, self-destructive behaviors, substance abuse, and other very negative and very serious behavioral and psychological problems. Well, just in closing, let me summarize. Adolescent behavior is best understood and observed in light of identity development. The social development carries the young person from being very self-involved to becoming able to develop intimate relationships with others, and finally to develop a strong sense of commitment in their relationships. Another very important characteristic of adolescence is that of career development, the finding of a career or professional orientation that will carry them through at least a good portion of their adulthood and give them a further arena for developing their sense of identity. They move from an egocentric self-focus toward a greater ability to think of others and to give to others and to see the world from others' perspectives. They move typically from cynicism and criticalness to idealism and to a forward hope and a longing for the future. Another important characteristic of adolescence that we as parents need to keep in mind is that of experimenting with new behaviors. And as long as these behaviors are not terribly dangerous or immoral or unacceptable, then we need, with patience and trust and minimal guidance, to encourage them and to help them to know that they are very much loved by us. Well, it is our task as moms and dads to help our teenagers to grow in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and men. And I wish you God's very best as you embark on this most important task, and as you continue in this most important task of parenting your teenager.
This completes side one of Dr. Olson's presentation on parenting teenagers. Please turn over the tape and begin listening to side two. On side one of this tape, Dr. Keith Olson talked with you about adolescence and about some of the struggles and stresses that young people face during this particularly difficult time in life. Maybe you haven't thought about it, but adolescence is a very stressful time. It's a difficult time for kids because they have problems getting along in a number of areas. For one thing, many of the teenagers that are in our homes and that we work with have people stress. They have difficulty getting along with other people, with adults, with people in their communities, and this puts them under a lot of pressure. Secondly, they have what we might call peer stress. That's the idea of handling pressures that come from other people. If everybody dresses in a certain way, or everybody behaves in a certain way, or everybody is expecting something that your teenager maybe wishes that he or she couldn't do, even so, peer stress can be very, very influential in this period of life. The third kind of stress is what we might call chemical stress. This is the stress that comes when teenagers are tempted to take drugs, to experiment with alcohol, to try some of the chemicals that we read so much about in the newspapers and that our kids encounter many times as they're going about their daily lives and in school. A fourth kind of stress is what we might call parent stress. This is the kind of stress that comes from you. The difficulties that kids have in living at home, in having values that differ from the values of their parents, in dressing in ways that don't always please their parents. It's difficult for those of us who are parents, but it's also difficult for the kids, especially as they're learning to have the independence that they need and sometimes coming into fresh conflict with their parents. Then there is what we might call family stress. Many times young people, especially in the teenage years, are distressed to discover that their parents aren't getting along very well, that there is divorce being talked about in the family. Maybe there's alcoholism in one or both of the parents. And when there is stress at home, this can be very difficult for teenagers who are trying to find their way in the world and trying to get along at school and in other important parts of their life. Then there is what we might call self-stress. It's the idea of learning to like yourself. Many times teenagers don't like the way they look. They don't like the way they dress. They don't like the size of their ears or the size of their mouth or something like this. And it becomes difficult to handle those things. And teenagers, as you know, are very conscious about the way they dress, the way they carry themselves, the kinds of people they are, the things they do well, the things they don't do well. And sometimes there are some real feelings of insecurity as they think about themselves and some of the weaknesses that they perceive in themselves. Then we could look at what we might call emotional stress. How do you handle your feelings when you're a teenager? What if you want to cry, but it's not appropriate to cry? We all know that teenagers sometimes giggle, and sometimes that's not appropriate. But it's difficult to handle the feelings that sometimes come because of changes in the hormones in the body, but sometimes come because of stresses in the environment around them and difficulties of relating to other people and feelings of incompetence and inadequacy and maybe even stupidity. These are all emotional stresses that bother teenagers. Then, of course, there are the sexual stresses. Sexual stresses come because the hormones are working in this time of life like they have never worked before. And people who 5 or 6 years ago were never noticing the opposite sex discover now that they're very much interested in the opposite sex. And sexual urges are very strong, and it's sometimes very difficult to control one's sexuality, especially when we live in a culture that seems to be so saturated with references to sex. So sexual stress is another difficulty. Then there is what we might call religious stress. What are you going to believe as you grow up? Do you believe what your parents taught you? Do you believe what you learned in church? Maybe you want to try something different. Maybe you want to experiment with going to a different church or not going to church at all. These kinds of struggles face many young people as they debate what they believe and why they believe it. And in all of this, there is what we might call future stress. Where am I going to go? What's the future going to hold for me? What am I going to do after I get out of high school? Should I go to college? Where will I go to college? What kind of a career will I choose? These kinds of things are often on the minds of young people, and they are reminded about them frequently by their teachers and sometimes even by those of us who are parents. These stress problems sometimes bring about a series of reactions, and you might see these in your youngsters, in your teenagers. On the outline, I've listed 9 of these reactions, and it's possible that you have seen all 9 of them at some time in your teenager. First, there is what we might call the dreamer reaction. This is the tendency to escape life's problems into a little world of fantasy. Very often, teenagers dream about how life could be better. They imagine themselves being rich or famous or successful or attractive or out from under the influence of parents. Maybe they think of themselves as being a well-known rock star or somebody who's very famous. Frequently, they like to go to concerts and get close to their teenage heroes because in a way that helps to present a world that is different from the reality of the world in which they live. And sometimes you look at your kids and it seems like their minds are many miles away. They're dealing with stress by being dreamers. Then there's a way of dealing with stress which you might call a complainer reaction. Some teenagers, it seems, are always griping. I suppose that's true of all of us of any age, But sometimes kids are finding fault with their parents, with their friends, with their teachers, with the people at work, with the kids at school, with the Sunday school, with the church, anything that gets in the way, they're griping all the time. And sometimes it seems like nothing is right, everything is wrong, and these teenagers can very often become bitter and sour even while they're young people. The complainer reaction is very common in teenagers. So is the third thing on the list, the brooder reaction. This is people who don't say very much about their stresses, but they seem to have a lot of problems mulling over in their minds. These people aren't necessarily complainers, but they spend hours thinking about how unfair things are and how terrible life can be. And sometimes the brooding pulls the people down so that they become depressed and sometimes even suicidal. Another way of handling stress is the charmer reaction. Several years ago, we received a Christmas card in our house in which the mother wrote that her 6-year-old daughter was seeing a child psychologist who said that the girl had a case of cutesies. Well, that was a 6-year-old, but sometimes we see this in our teenagers. They kind of get silly, they become childish, they act not their age, but like they're little kids. It's a wonderful way to get attention and to have everybody think that they are cute. Girls are more inclined to do this than guys are, but sometimes in both sexes, there is a tendency to be cute in a way to try and deal with the stresses of life. Then there is what we might call the explainer reaction. Here are the people who have an explanation for everything. If there's bad grades, it's the teacher's fault. If they don't do well in a football game, it's the coach's fault. If they forget to take out the garbage, it's the parents' fault for not reminding them. Everything is always explained away. It's, in a sense, a subtle form of convincing yourself that you're not responsible for anybody. It's a common reaction in teenagers. Closely connected with this is the avoider reaction, kind of the ostrich way of handling problems. Instead of burying their heads in the sands, these kids escape into a world of television, or novels, or sports, or hobbies, or sometimes even religion. This lets kids forget about their problems and pretend that the problems don't exist. But they do exist, and they continue, even though the kids are trying to forget them. Then there is what we might call the actor reaction. This is putting up a front, pretending to be something that they aren't. When his dad was killed in a car accident several years ago, one young man pretended, even to himself, that the loss didn't mean much. Working on the assumption that 16-year-olds don't cry, he showed no emotion at the funeral and tried to carry on as if nothing had happened. Months passed before he faced his grief honestly and freely admitted that he was lonely and angry and very sad. Well, the world is filled with actors like this, and many times they are teenage actors. They may pretend that all is going well, but underneath they're really struggling. And if you watch them carefully, you notice this. Then there are those who have what we might call a tackler reaction, like the football players who hit the opposition with force and determination. These people face their stresses honestly and try to do something about them. Sometimes, however, they don't know what to do. Nobody has told them how to handle their doubts or their pressures or their career decisions or their troublesome emotions or their problems with parents. And that's why we try to help them as counselors and as parents to tackle the stresses that they encounter in their lives. But hopefully, we would like to see our kids develop what we might call the believer reaction. When they reach their teenage years, many people begin to question if their religious beliefs are true. They begin to wonder about the beliefs of their parents. In the midst of this struggle, however, a new awareness of God often emerges. This is a recognition that the God who creates us understands us and protects us and cares for us and helps us with our stresses, even when we might not think very much about His influences. Well, these are some of the kinds of reactions that kids have when they have stresses. I could have mentioned others. I could have mentioned, for example, that kids sometimes joke about their problems and sometimes pass them off in that way. These are common reactions among teenagers, but they joke, they laugh, but the problems are still there. On your guide sheet, you have two questions that are being asked. What stresses is your teenager facing at present? And what are some of the ways in which your teenager is reacting to these stresses? Look over the list of some of the stresses on the guide sheet, or look over some of the reactions that teenagers many times use when they encounter stress. Is your teenager characterized by a dreamer reaction, a complainer reaction, a brooder reaction, or some other kind of reaction? It would help you in parenting your teenagers, if you could stop and answer these two questions right now. Please find a piece of paper to write out your answers. Maybe the father and the mother would each like to write their answers and discuss them together. And perhaps even later you can talk this over with your kids. But please stop the tape and answer these two questions now. Now that you have answered these two questions, let's take a couple of minutes to think about a passage of Scripture that describes Jesus when he was a teenager. In Luke 2:52, we read that Jesus grew in wisdom and in stature and in favor with God and men. This verse speaks of four areas of adolescent development. There was first mental development. Jesus grew in wisdom. Secondly, there was physical development. He grew in stature. Thirdly, there was spiritual development. He grew in favor with God. And fourth, there was social development. He grew in favor with other human beings. On your guide sheet at step 3, you will notice that there are two further questions. How is your teen developing in each of the four areas mentioned on the tape? The mental, physical, spiritual, and social areas. And in which of these areas is your teen strongest? In which is he or she weakest? It would be helpful if you could discuss these questions with your mate. And it might also be helpful to discuss your answers later with the teenager. Why don't you stop the tape and talk about this right now? Side 1 of this tape indicates that some form of rebellion is necessary for normal adolescent development. But this rebellion is not very easy for a parent to handle. Many times, however, we forget that rebellion may be a way of communication. Your teenager may be saying something by the way in which he or she rebels. Do you remember when your kids were little, many years ago before they could even talk? Sometimes they would cry to indicate that they needed to be changed or were uncomfortable or needed to be fed. When they got older, sometimes they'd act in aggressive ways to maybe see if you were paying attention, to see if you really cared about them. They couldn't talk about their feelings and their hurts and their stresses, but you as a parent began to read their behavior pretty carefully. Well, now that your kids are teenagers, they may be trying to communicate something to you in a similar way. On your guide sheet at step 4, you will notice that we have a chart. The first column of the chart talks about the type of behavior. Think, for example, of some kind of rebellious behavior that you have seen recently in your adolescent. Does that behavior have some kind of meaning? Maybe your son or daughter is saying by that behavior, I'm angry, I'm trying to hurt you back, I'm trying to control the situation, I'm experimenting with new behavior, I need to be different right now. I want to know if you're putting any limits on me. Maybe this behavior means something. Then in the third column, you could record your reactions in the past. What have you done in the past? Have you exploded? Have you been critical? Have you ignored the behavior? Have you confronted the young person? Have you shown discipline in some way? Have you talked about how you feel? Then in the fourth column, you maybe could think of some better reactions. You may find that the space on the guide sheet does not give you enough space to write all of your responses to these questions, so you might want to copy this onto a larger sheet of paper. But note the different kinds of rebellious behavior that your teenager shows, and see if you can decide what it means, how you've reacted in the past, and what might be a better reaction in the future. When you have finished with this, discuss this with your mate, and if the opportunity presents itself, discuss it with your teenager. In this way, you'll be able to get a better understanding of the rebellious behavior that your teenager may be going through, what it means, and how it could be handled better. Please stop the tape and fill out this chart right now. Psychologists, ministers, and many parents know that the self-concept is one of the most powerful ways of determining how a person acts. Parenting is one of the ways in which we build or sometimes destroy the self-concept in our kids. I know of one parent, for example, who is constantly criticizing his teenager. And as a result, the kid feels incompetent, incapable, not respected by his parents, and unable to really function very well at school and in other places. He is constantly being put down. I know another parent who is building up that parent's daughter. This parent shows a lot of respect for the opinions of the daughter, even though the daughter's opinions sometimes are way off the wall and sometimes even complicated. The parents say, I don't agree with you, but I respect your right to think this. And that kid knows I've got some thoughts that my parents will listen to. They're not going to be putting me down all the time. What I'm thinking may not be what they agree with, but at least it's something worthwhile. And those kinds of ideas build up the teenager's self-concept. It could be helpful for you, alone or with your mate, to ponder what could be done to build the self-concept in the teenager or teenagers who live in your house. Let me suggest three things that you might do. You might reflect on the way your parents treated you when you were a teenager. What sorts of things did they do that made you feel good, that enabled you to function well and to deal with stresses? And what sorts of things did they do that put you down? Maybe by looking at your own upbringing, you can learn some ways to build the self-concepts in your own teenagers. Secondly, you can list what you think you could do to improve the self-concept in your son and daughter. At the same time, you might think of some of the things that you have been doing and shouldn't do that kind of knock down the self-concepts of your son and daughter. So you can make that list and think about it later and maybe add some new ideas to the list. Thirdly, you can ask your teenager, what can I do to help you feel good about yourself, to build up your own self-concept? What sorts of things am I doing that kind of make it hard for you, that knock you down? Kids are very perceptive about this, and if you are open enough to discuss it with them, they'll be honest with you. And the mere fact that you are concerned about this and willing to talk about it is an indication to your son or daughter that you are concerned about how they function with the stressful times in which they live. There are also some ways that you can help kids to deal with stress. We have listed these on step 5 of the guide sheet. Let's mention them briefly. First, if a kid has a problem, or if you as a parent has a problem, it's helpful to admit it. This isn't always easy. Sometimes teenagers especially are afraid to admit a problem. They see admitting this as a sign of weakness, even though it really is a sign of strength. If you can encourage kids to admit their frustrations, their discouragements, their stresses, then they can deal with them better. The sooner a problem is admitted, the better and more quickly it can be dealt with. But it's also important to pray about it. Sometimes we think of prayer as a last resort, but prayer should be the first line of defense against the stresses of life. God, who creates us, understands us. He has promised to stick with us, to guide us, to give us the stability that we need, to enable us to resist temptation. And once we've admitted the problem and know what it is, then we need to bring it to the Lord and ask the Lord to guide us in all that we do, especially as we're coping with the stresses of life. Your teenager can do that about his or her stresses. You can do that in terms of the stresses that you face dealing with a teenager. Then, I think, thirdly, it can help to analyze it. What specific things are creating the stress? What am I doing to cope with the stress? What strengths do I have for dealing with the stress? What kinds of things could I do to change my behavior? How can I help the situation to improve? What things can be done now, and what should be done at a later time? By answering these questions, we analyze what is causing the stress and what we might do about it. Sitting down and thinking about it, especially if you talk it over with somebody, can be a very helpful way of dealing with stress for you and with your teenager. Then, fourthly, you can look at it. Maybe there's more than one way to look at the stress or the problems you're facing. I once counseled with a girl who had all kinds of trouble with the police. During one of her counseling sessions, I was called from the room, and when I returned, she was seated with her back to the door, looking pretty dejected. Without thinking, I put my hand gently on her shoulder. I meant it as a gesture of support, as a way of saying, I care. But she didn't see it that way. In a flash, she jumped to her feet, fists swinging, and almost hit me right in the face. Suddenly, she stopped herself. Don't ever touch me, she blurted out. I'm not used to having that happen. I'm accustomed to swinging first and asking questions later. See, this girl had learned to see the world as a hostile place. Even a slight touch on the shoulder had been interpreted as something threatening, something that she could not handle. Many times, we look at situations from one perspective, but we could see the situation from a different perspective. Sometimes a kid falls in love, and the love relationship breaks up, and for the kid, it's a disaster. For the parents, you've seen it before, it's not a disaster at all. We're looking at it from a different point of view. Maybe you think it's good that the relationship broke up. So I think we need to recognize that whatever there is a stress, there may be more than one way of looking at the situation. And you look at it one way, help your teenager or yourself to look at it another way. Perhaps what seems so bad from one perspective really isn't so bad if you back up and take another look. Then you can decide what to do about it. Sometimes you have to stop certain activities. You have to arrange to move away from certain friends. Maybe it's important to change a job or to drop a course in school because it's too much pressure. Many times when the stresses come along, if we think about it even for a few minutes, we can decide what can be done about it, can make some firm decisions, and as a result, the stresses can be reduced. Many times there can be value in avoiding self-defeatist actions towards stress. What do we mean by self-defeatist actions? Often this is the kind of behavior that gets you into trouble. It's a kind of behavior that you respond with without really thinking. Everybody knows that when we get angry, it sometimes is helpful to count to 10 before we respond. Well, many times when teenagers get angry, they speak first and then wish later that they hadn't spoken so quickly. I once knew a man who actually got mad at a bus driver and demanded to be let off so he could walk home defiantly in protest and in the heat. I wonder what he thought that would accomplish. It wasn't the bus driver who got the sore feet. If he had stopped and thought for a few minutes, he would have stayed on the bus for a little bit longer. Sometimes teenagers react impulsively. They get angry and they wish later that they hadn't reacted the way they did. Maybe we can help to ask them, "Do you really want to send the letter you wrote? Do you really want to stay away from the party? Do you really want to say what you're thinking? Do you really want to leave home? Do you really want to take that drug?" I suspect kids often will decide, if they think about it even for a few minutes, that in the long run it's better to find a more realistic way to face the problem instead of doing something that they'll be sorry about later. And this is something that can help us as parents too. Then often it can be valuable to back away from the problem. Sometimes I talk to businessmen, housewives, pastors, parents, even college students about their stresses. Usually I tell them to slow down for a while and think about their whole lives. But too often these people are very busy. They run from one activity to others, and then they wonder why they feel so tired and pressured. I've had that in my own life. You've probably had that in your life too. Any parent feels this after a while. But sometimes we need to slow down. And maybe our teenagers need to slow down, too. Are they getting enough sleep and physical exercise? Is their diet well-balanced, or are they overloaded with junk food? Are they avoiding alcohol, drugs, or other things that might be causing problems in their lives and putting a bad influence on their bodies? Are they overly involved with athletics, work, study, music, a hobby, or some activity that is consuming too much time? It's interesting for me to ponder, with some degree of frequency, that in Mark chapter 1, Jesus was very busy. But even Jesus pulled away from the crowds. He got away to rest, to talk to his heavenly Father, to keep things in perspective. It's possible, of course, to spend too much time alone. But sometimes when kids are having a lot of stresses, we need to encourage them to back away from the problem so they can get a better perspective on what is causing the stresses in life. Then there is value to talk about it. Maybe they'll talk to you about it. Maybe they'll talk to a friend about it. I once talked to a girl as a counselee who loved to talk about her problems. She talked to her counselor, that happened to be me, but she talked about her parents, her teacher, her neighbors, the people she worked with, and the other kids at school. Before long, people cringed whenever they saw her coming. Nobody wanted to listen to her going on and on and on about her problems. We've all met people like this, and sometimes we want to be careful that we don't do the same thing with other people, so we don't talk about our pressures. But too little talking can be just as harmful as boring everybody with too much talking. When we're under stress, we often feel confused and overwhelmed and not sure what to do. Many times your kids feel that way, and they need somebody to talk to. It may be you that they can talk to. But don't be distressed if they find somebody else in the church, another parent, maybe a friend, a teacher, a youth leader. Maybe the kids feel more comfortable talking about some of their intimate problems with people who are not their parents. Encourage them to talk about their problems, even if they don't choose to talk to you about it. Then, whenever we have stresses, teenager stress or otherwise, we can learn from it. I teach at a school where many of our students are in their mid-20s and older. Our courses run for about 10 weeks, and it's interesting to see how the students handle the pressure. They start the first week enthusiastically, then they coast along until midterm exams come, they coast a little more, and then they work like crazy, almost to a state of exhaustion, trying to get ready for the final examinations. Next time it will be different, I've heard many of them say over and over again, but they don't seem to learn. Next time it's the same old pressures, the same old rush, doing the same things over and over again. This probably sounds familiar. We want to learn from our mistakes, but often we don't. But maybe we can learn from our stresses. Maybe as parents we can learn from the mistakes we made in the past and do it differently the next time. Maybe we can help our kids with this. Ask your son or daughter, what did you learn from this stressful situation? What might you do next time? That can be helpful. And then certainly we can reach out from it. Many times we spend a lot of time thinking about our difficulties, our problems, our stresses, but we forget about the fact that real value can come when we reach out to other people. Everybody, I suppose, knows about Alcoholics Anonymous. It's an organization in which people who have a drinking problem spend a lot of their time helping other people who have drinking problems. And many times these people find when they reach out to another drinker, that helps them to deal with and control their own drinking problems. Often, when problems come into our own lives, we can spend so much time thinking about our own stresses that we withdraw. Parents can reach out to other parents. Kids can reach out to other kids and share together and pray together and help one another. This is a healthy way, and I suggest a biblical way, to deal with many of the stresses that we face as parents of teenagers or as teenagers. This completes the tape on parenting teenagers. When you have finished with this tape, please return it to your counselor. If you have another counseling session scheduled, please be sure to take this guide sheet and any of your written notes with you so you can discuss these next time you're together with the counselor.